This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. And thanks to Jan Swift, who did a stellar job yesterday in the host chair. It's good to be back with you on Super Tuesday, 34 weeks before Election Day. Much will happen between now and then, particularly on the Democratic side. We know who the Republican nominee for president will be. It will be Donald John Trump, seeking a second term at the age of 74 years old. That's how old he'll be on Election Day. And the Democrats are down to five candidates, and the three candidates who are considered the front runners are all 77 or above. And with us to talk about what's happening on the Democratic side, with Amy Klobuchar getting out yesterday, Pete Buttigieg out, they both endorsed Joe Biden, the 77-year-old former vice president who's trying to stop Bernie Sanders, who is the front runner right now. Good morning, Sean Illing of Vox, who spent many years in Louisiana and is now in Washington, 4 years there, and it's a pleasure to share the microphone with you, Sean.
It's good to be back, Jim. It's I missed your voice. It's been too long since I've been back on the show, so it's a pleasure.
Well, you've been following this, and Sean does compelling interviews with people who are involved in the political process, and one of those a few weeks ago was none other than James Carville, and I spoke off the air to James Carville, who is slated to be with us tomorrow. And he said, with over a million people, or maybe I'm lowballing it, a lot of people made a note of what he said to you.
Yeah, that I think it. The last I checked, there was over 2 million people who had read that interview. So it, for a whole lot of reasons, it appeared to have touched a nerve on both sides of the political aisle, and it got a lot of people talking. That is for sure.
I think that was about 3 weeks ago, and Carville's quote was, "We're losing our damn minds." Did he have a point, and are the minds perhaps in a better shape now than they were a few days ago on the Democratic side?
You know, it depends on who you ask. If personally speaking, I think James did have a good point, and that point was something like, you know, look, there's the world we want, and there's the world we have. And in the world we have, politically, sometimes pragmatism is the best road forward. We have a political system in which you can't get much done without compromise. And the problem with Biden, at least from the perspective of Carville and a lot of people who are sort of old-school establishment Democrats, is that I think more or less everyone thinks it's possible that Bernie Sanders could win the presidency. I think one of the lessons from 2016 is that, look, all of these political pundits have no freaking idea what's happening, and no one really knows what's possible. So Bernie could win, and Bernie polls reasonably well against Trump in some of the national polls. The problem is that in our political system, as long as Mitch McConnell controls the Senate, basically nothing will get done. And the fear of Carville and many others is that if you have someone like Bernie Sanders at the top of the ticket, it could have disastrous down ballot consequences, right? It could hurt the party in those House races and some of these Senate races and some of these local races. It'll turn a lot of people off. For better or worse, and for whatever reason, the word socialism still has quite a sting and carries a lot of baggage. And so Bernie will be very easy to caricature in that way. And if you scare enough people off, if you scare enough people in the middle of the country off, and you lose any chance of retaking the Senate, then it doesn't matter who's president, because nothing will get done. And that's why people like Carville are sort of freaking out right now, that, you know, they feel if you had someone like a Biden or someone like a Klobuchar, someone who's a little more sort of centrist, who probably has a better chance at winning the handful of states you have to win, like Ohio and Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, et cetera, that they have a better chance of rallying the middle of the country enough so that they can have a good chance of retaking the Senate and therefore, you know, passing their legislative agenda. And so that's more or less the fear from the Carvilles of the world. And I think there are good reasons to be feared, to be fearful about that. But, you know, having said all that, nobody really knows what will happen or what's possible. But that is the argument against Bernie, and it's not a bad one.
The betting odds in Las Vegas now, and this has all happened within the last few days, now have Joe Biden as the favorite for the Democratic nomination, 49.8%. Close second is Bernie Sanders, 44.2%. 14 states are casting ballots today in Super Tuesday. Louisiana comes next month. But after today, we'll have a clearer picture. And many of these states have early voting, as we do in Louisiana. And many ballots were cast, of course, before what happened yesterday with the endorsements of by Klobuchar and by Buttigieg of Biden. So is this going to be a good night for Bernie?
Well, I think it has the potential to be. I mean, a lot of it is just a kind of big open question, right? I mean, what you have right now is the kind of moderate centrist wing of a party kind of galvanizing around Biden as the kind of last great hope to beat back this kind of revolution that is Bernie Sanders. And it remains to be seen whether just because, you know, Amy Klobuchar or a Pete Buttigieg drop out of the race and endorse Biden doesn't necessarily mean that all of their supporters will vote for Biden. I think we can reasonably assume that a lot will, but we don't know that for sure. And so, you know, I think Biden has a very good chance of having a good night, but it's also entirely plausible that Bernie could win a huge number of delegates and basically have an insurmountable lead in the delegate count after Tuesday night or after tonight. But, you know, it's up in the air. I mean, but, you know, after all the hoopla, after all the bickering, who thought that we'd basically come down to Bernie and Biden in the end? Because that's basically what we have. There's people like Bloomberg and Warren are still in the race technically, but they're not going to win the nomination. This is going to be Bernie or Biden, and I think we'll have a much better indication of what things are going to look like after tonight, but it's still very much an open question. I think there are plenty of good reasons to believe that both of them could have a good night, but, you know, we'll know more in about 12 hours.
Yes, we will. We're visiting with Sean Illing of Vox for a few more minutes, and then the general election matchups. Polls show Sanders ahead of Trump by 4.9%, Biden ahead of Trump by 5.4%, and I must say that the four other candidates who were viable at the beginning of this week, Bloomberg, Buttigieg, Warren, and Klobuchar, they all were ahead of Trump as well, and by not as much as Biden and Sanders. But these polls, as I noted last week, can change in a blink. Michael Dukakis was once 17 points ahead of George H.W. Bush, and he ended up losing that race in a landslide. 877-217-5757. Quickly, Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on with Sean.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. I have to wonder, I mean, how much sense does it make to bail on your campaign the day before Super Tuesday? I mean, that's supposed to be the biggest time to get votes. And why wouldn't you hold out to see how well you would do? I mean,
all right. Well, what about this? Was this an effort to propel Biden? Is that what this is about? Realizing in the cases of Klobuchar and Buttigieg after their poor showings in South Carolina that they had no chance. Is this what this is about, to keep Bernie Sanders from getting the nomination?
I think so. It's a good question. And, you know, look, it's always a difficult decision to make about, you know, canceling or suspending your campaign. But I think both of them looked at the situation honestly and determined that they basically had no chance to win. And I think the fact that they bailed before Super Tuesday, before the polls opened today, is an indication of the desperation of that wing of the party to kind of rally behind someone who has the chance to beat Bernie, because I think everyone looked at the tea leaves and said, you know, Bernie is extremely close to running away with this thing. And if we bail after Super Tuesday, then it may be too late to stop him. And so I think that's a huge part of the calculus. And I think another part of the calculus is Klobuchar and Pete, if Biden does win, probably want to be part of that administration. And so I would not dismiss that as a motivation here as well. But I really do think the primary aim here is to stop Bernie. And I think everyone realized that Biden is the kind of last best hope of doing that. And so if they were going to rally behind him, now's the time to do it.
Tracy at the Capitol notes that Beto O'Rourke also endorsed Biden. And Texas, of course, has a huge mass of delegates at stake today as well. Ricky Causey writes, the Democrats, Sean, would almost certainly have to choose a woman to be on the ticket. Who should this be? Who is the likely Veep choice, whether it's Biden or Sanders?
It's a really good question. And, you know, I think there's always a lot of calculations to make when it comes to the VP, because the VP doesn't serve, I would say that the VP does not serve a whole lot of crucial political purposes in terms of the actual administration. The best you can hope to get from a VP is to, you know, maybe pick up a couple of constituencies that otherwise you wouldn't pick up. And, you know, to that end, I think someone like a Warren could be a potential viable candidate, because I think she may be able to attract some of those more progressive-oriented voters who at this point are kind of torn between maybe Warren and Bernie, or a little suspicious. Someone like Biden, who's more establishment, and he's kind of been around for a long while. Warren is someone who represents change for a lot of people. And
okay, we do have to roll, but Sean, we'll be calling on you again soon. Sean Illing of Vox, local guy who's made good in Washington. We'll be back with Roy Fletcher after this pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Alondra Villarreal is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. We go to the other side of the political spectrum, Roy Fletcher, who's a man who's ventured from one side to the other. He is a Republican and a
back and forth
avid supporter of the President of the United States, Donald John Trump. And he is here to talk about Super Tuesday and much more. Anything on your mind, I'm sure Roy can handle it. 877-217-5757. Roy Fletcher, Super Tuesday, the Democrats now have whittled the field to five candidates, and Sean Illing just said he thought only two now are viable.
Five?
Five. Can you name them?
I can name four. I can't name five.
Tulsi Gabbard is
still in. Oh,
that's
right. She's still in.
She's still in. That's right. That's right.
I kind of like her, too.
Yeah, and so does Vladimir Putin, apparently.
Yeah,
but,
well, yeah.
But Vladimir supposedly likes Bernie, too.
He likes everybody.
So if you were handling Trump, and who knows, Roy might end up working for him before this is all over.
Never know.
Who would you want to run against, Biden or Sanders?
I mean, obviously, I think it's Bernie Sanders, clearly.
Who you would want to run against.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no question about that. Trounce him like a dog. I mean, that's like McGovern versus Nixon. I mean, that's what that would end up being, minus Eagleton. But I still think, though, that the Joe Biden thing is he's a little bit tougher to beat, but on the other hand, I think that's beatable for the president. The question is, I mean, to me, is that what's going to happen with the four lanes today? And it's I think it's the most one of the most fascinating days in American politics I've seen in a long time. It's just really fascinating what's happened over the last – since South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And let's remember that Joe Biden's campaign was saved by a guy named James Clyburn. There's no question in my mind about that. Clyburn saved his butt. And he's a great congressman from South Carolina, Democrat. I don't agree with him, but he's a very much of a stalwart and has been for years. And he just took Joe Biden by the hand and said, let's go. We're going to do this. And saved him. And since then, the bravery in the party has suddenly indexed quite high.
Well, it was African-American voters that made this happen.
Absolutely. There's no question about that. There is no question about that.
And African-American voters, who are not a majority in the country, they are a majority in the South Carolina Democratic primary. They will be a majority in the Louisiana Democratic primary.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
Which means Joe Biden will probably win Louisiana.
I would think so.
And Cedric Richmond, of course, this is national campaign.
Although there's been an effort by Bloomberg in this state to do things. The mayor of Shreveport, in fact, Adrian Perkins, I think it's Perkins, he's a big Bloomberg guy, but I don't think that.
Well, Bloomberg has to do well today, or at least well enough, or he won't be around in April either.
Jim, that's sort of what the day is. That's what I find fascinating about it is who survives this day, and I think Elizabeth Warren's going to go on. I think she's going to stay in for a little while longer, but who survives this day, and how does it look when they survive it? Bloomberg has to finish second in some places. He just does. I mean, he's got to do mm-hmm. some – he maybe got to win one maybe, you know. I don't know. But with that kind of money, he figures he can count. But how does Bernie Sanders and Biden look when the day's over? Is it a split? If it's a split, that's a win for Bernie. If it's not a split, then, you know, then Biden's on the – he's on the trail.
Well, I think Biden on this day, because of the early voting, which – probably went handsomely for Sanders. Biden would accept the split because he figures he can move on down the road. Well, the problem is in
Bernie general, will accept the split too, frankly. I would tell you that right now.
Getting to 1991, the number of delegates that could be tough for anybody other than Sanders based on what Sanders has in place. And he has the most solid base. He has the most passionate supporters.
And remember, there are states out there that will be caucus states and that kind of stuff mm-hmm. that he can win in, clearly. But today, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, here you kind of look at it and you go, well, Biden's going to run the South. But Texas is a question. I think Texas is a question because Bernie Sanders does really well with Hispanic voters, and he proved that in Nevada, however you say it. And I looked at the numbers in North Carolina. The last thing they had in North Carolina had Sanders slightly ahead up there. I don't think he'll win it, but he'll be very, very close. Massachusetts, Sanders will win. Vermont, California.
You're saying Massachusetts, he will win over Warren, who's a –
he would beat the hell out of Warren in Massachusetts.
Okay, all right.
Okay. And that'll be a big deal for him. He'd be able to make a case on that. So, and Biden, if Biden gets – now, here's the deal with Biden. If he gets corralled just into the South, mm-hmm. then the argument's going to be made he's not a national candidate in some ways. And that's going to have to be dealt with by the Biden thing. I just think that today tells us – you know, people say, well, Bernie's going to win and then Biden's going to – I don't think we know yet. I think it's still a battle. I agree with you on that. I mean, it's – Sanders has still got a shot at this thing.
Well, sure he does.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure I mean, but the people – there's a bunch of people in the last 72 hours that tried to ride him out of this deal.
Well, but it's apparent he's right. The Democratic hierarchy doesn't want him. And I don't think this is personal. I think they just don't think he can win.
I don't think they think he can win, number one. And number two, I don't think they want their congressional people and senatorial people running with him at the head of the ticket.
Well, because they think that'll down, be – like Doug Jones in Alabama, who may lose anyway, but he's definitely toast if it's Bernie.
Yeah, it's going to be a bad drag down for him, you know. Now, last night they had the rally in Texas, and it's fascinating that they bought Mayor Pete. Mayor Pete, okay, fine. But Beto and Klobuchar was there. I think that Klobuchar was there for a reason. I think they went after her hard because I think they're behind in Minnesota. And Beto, I think, was there for a reason because I think they were close in Texas.
And I'm going to move out of order here. I got a couple of questions from listeners. But
go ahead.
But this one from I think this is Orge. He asks about Al Franken, who was expected to run for president, and he would have been the senator from Minnesota who would have run. And I hadn't thought about this in a while, but if he had not been exposed as acting inappropriately with women, he would have been a very strong candidate.
He'd be a huge candidate right now because he'd be Bernie
and
with a
kind of,
Adam.
And he's
he'd
the kind Bernie of guy who'd drive Trump absolutely crazy.
Absolutely. He would be absolutely that way. And I mean, I would call him a Bernie with a sense of humor. And it would have been fascinating to see that.
Okay. And here's another listener who says, this is Lindsay, saying the Democrats made a big to-do, myself included, about New Hampshire and Iowa being out of sync with the Democratic Party demographically, and then South Carolina has a large percentage of African Americans. But South Carolina, Lindsay writes correctly, is not going to go for the Democrats in November.
Is that Lindsay Gray? No.
It's fine. Maybe this is somebody under an assumed name. Or maybe it is Lindsay.
I don't know. I'm joking. But I hope he's listening to us. The point is that the Southern Democratic Party is a majority black party. And in many of these deep South states, and South Carolina in particular, and so they're a bit out of the, you know, the demographic kind of thing, too. So,
but South Carolina will not go for anybody
not.
Other than Donald John Trump.
No.
We saw that in the Superdome when Clemson played LSU. It was a love fest with all the white fans from South Carolina and Louisiana cheering mightily for
everybody
the president.
Everybody agreed with that. Everybody agreed with that. There's no question about that. But the truth is that we are a little bit out of line. So Biden comes out of this thing. If he gets sort of controlled and contained within that situation, then the question is going to be raised by Sanders and him. Is he not a national candidate? Now, whether or not that's true or not, I don't know. But the point of it is that's going to be one of the arguments made.
One more segment to go with Roy Fletcher, the seasoned political consultant who once helped run John McCain's presidential campaign. And it was South Carolina that caused McCain to lose to George W. Bush. We'll be back.
It's been 6 weeks.
After this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Amid the Super Tuesday fracas in 14 states, the country is, of course, and the world following the coronavirus. The markets have not responded well in the United States and abroad to this news. And yesterday was a comeback of almost 1,300 points in the Dow, 5%. Today, the market is basically right where it ended yesterday. It was up early. Now it's even, 26,703. And we'll see what happens. But the drop last week was not good for the president. Rasmussen, the poll that he likes best, a week ago had him at 52% approval. Its latest poll has him at 46% in 1 week. And, Roy, you know there are all kinds of aberrations that can affect polls, but no doubt about it, the economy is going to be an issue. And in this country at this time, the stock market is something that affects more people than ever before, and the president could rise or fall on the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
Well, if that's the case, then he'll be president. But the truth is that he did drop six. He went up five the week before. He runs somewhere between 47 and 51.
Well, the conflation of polls right now is at 45.6.
Yeah, but I don't believe those conflation of polls, Jim, because I look at those polls very skeptically because they're always adults and very, very broad screens. I look at tight screens on these polls, and that's what – the truth is, that's why I like that Rasmussen poll. A lot of people don't like that poll, and I understand why. But on the other hand, because it's phone stuff, it's at whatever you call it.
Well, he's at 46. And to show you.
That's about right. I mean, that's about
right. Fox has him at 47, YouGov 44, Reuters 43, Politico 45, Emerson 48. Although that poll was taken a few weeks ago, and ABC 46. So
that's about right.
And he's at 45.6, and he won the election with 46.1 votes.
He's about right where he needs to be.
Percent.
46.
53.9% of the people voted for somebody else. You like the Electoral College, don't you?
Well, I mean, I don't want to change it. I mean, it's worked pretty damn well for a whole long time. I mean, that's the way I see it.
It has?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has. I think it's worked quite well. I mean, this country's doing pretty well.
Well, two of the last five elections have been determined by somebody who didn't win the vote.
That's not the rules of the game. The rules of the game, Electoral College, and we've known that for 200 and some odd years. So, I mean, and I think we've had pretty good presidents in this country. And, the country's done really well. I mean, given the fact that we're probably, the best nation in the world.
What if some state lawmaker, Roy, filed a bill saying that each parish in Louisiana would have a percentage of the vote based on population?
That's not what they can go do that all they want to. The fact of the matter is the Electoral College was established at the beginning of this country, and that's the way it is. I mean, that's what we run on. That's how we run this thing.
You're one of these purists. Original intent if you were on the Supreme Court, right?
I don't like messing with the system too much, except I like blowing it up, but I don't like changing the rules, and I do like
well, as
long I do
as
like
it's
the way we operate.
For your side, and Democrats
no,
who are calling
care.
For this would probably have a different perspective
I don't
if it
care.
Were on the other
I mean, we've
foot.
Had we've had Republicans. Maybe they got cheated too. I don't know. But the point of it is
it's been
that,
a long time.
Yeah,
but it almost happened with George W. Bush.
It did. Yeah, it did.
With John Kerry.
Yeah, you just made the point earlier.
Yeah, John Kerry. 59,000 votes flip in Ohio, he'd be the president despite losing to Bush by 3 million. But it's the only election in America where you get more votes and potentially lose. But it happens in the primaries, too.
Yeah.
Did you know Hillary Clinton got more votes than Barack Obama?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But superdelegates.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So why do we do what amounts to an unfair vote counting for president in lieu of doing
because
what we do for governor and U.S. senator
because
and other races?
Because it's a recognition of federalism and it's a recognition of states. And that's what it is. I mean, that's why it was done that way. And, I mean, I know that there's historians that make the case, oh, we're racist and all that. I don't buy that. It was done because of a recognition of federalism in the states. And I accept that. Mm-hmm. And I think states have a real role in this government still. I'm not one of these, you know, centralized guys. On the other hand, I can see the argument for it.
Well, another listener, and this is something we'll ask James Carville about tomorrow, since this guy is quoting Carville. Because of the U.S. Senate.
Yeah.
So here you got states with fewer than a million people, like North Dakota and Wyoming with two U.S. senators, and California with 40 million has two U.S. senators.
Precisely.
You like that?
Look, here's what I like. I like if you want to do away with the Electoral College, then do away with the states. If that's what you want to do, do it. But
what if a state wanted to divide into five different states? Would that be okay?
My point being is that if you want to do away with the Electoral College, do away with the states.
Why doesn't Washington, D.C. get
That's a good question.
Two U.S. senators?
That's a political question.
Why doesn't Puerto Rico get two U.S. senators?
Because they didn't get the votes.
Well, it's
because they didn't
get know those two U.S. senators would be Democrats in both places.
Because they didn't win the votes in the Congress. That's why.
877-217-5757. Rebel at LSU. Rebel.
Rebel.
Rebel with a cause.
Hi, Jim. Thank you. That's me. Thank you, Jim. I just disagree with the gentleman on the origins of the Electoral College. As I understand it, the Electoral College was placed in the Constitution by the Founding Fathers to prevent a demagogue. And clearly that didn't work. So here we are. But
exactly what demagogue are you talking about?
Donald Trump.
Come on, man! I don't even want to answer that. That's ridiculous.
Well, you know,
come on.
In 1800, Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr tied. Would you rather have had President Burr or President Jefferson?
Well, who did we get?
We got Jefferson.
That's all I care about.
Burr was the Veep, and then he went out and killed the Secretary of the Treasury.
Well, they had to do what they had to do, you know.
Times
were different.
That's right. Times were different. That's why something that worked at that time might not be the best for this time.
It has – well, let's put it this way. It worked 4 years ago, and it worked 4 years before that and 4 years before that. The point of it is that it is a – it seems to me that it makes a lot of sense as a – if we're going to – hold to the notion of federalism, it makes sense. If we want to get rid of it, then do away with the states.
David in Lafayette writes, slavery was established at the beginning of the country. Should we keep that? Women were not voting was established at the beginning of the country. Should we have kept that? We've amended the Constitution 27 times. We should at least do as Maine and Nebraska have done and do it by congressional district. And wonder if Trump would have won in 2016. And this is an open question because this is one time I agree with the president. The race would be run differently.
Yes, it would.
But I think he would have lost, but that's just me. But because it was not a particularly close race in the vote, but nonetheless, it would have been run differently. We don't live in a parallel universe.
Here's my point about that, and this is simple, is that the rules were the rules when he ran. And the rules have been the rules. And so, okay, you want to change the rules so you can win? Go ahead. I mean, that's fine. The whole point I make is that you have to have a recognition of federalism. And the states, if you do not want them to be represented that way, then do away with them.
All right, here's a guy identifying himself as a Trumpster, Jeff on Jefferson. That's what he says.
I like that.
Jeff on Jefferson says Trump really won the vote because there were 3 million illegal votes that went for Hillary.
Well,
every one of those illegal votes went for her, too.
Well,
not one of them went for him, right?
Who knows what? I mean, we don't know. But the point, I will say this much, is that, if he lost the popular vote, because, you know, I mean, he got beat badly in California next. I mean, okay, I got it.
All right. Let's see here. Trying to scroll. James asking about Pence. Says, would Trump be better suited with another running mate?
I don't think that he needs to change. If he did, I sure would like Nikki Haley to be that
she
running.
She would be, I think, helpful to him.
Yeah, I think so.
I think Rubio would be helpful. But now, of course, Trump is a Floridian, so he couldn't.
I think Haley would really be.
Haley would be a good choice.
Yeah,
I agree with you.
I
think she would be better than Pence.
I don't want to change it now, but if I did change, if it had to be changed, I would say Nikki Haley would be my first choice for that.
An Indian American woman from South Carolina.
Yep, and very accomplished. And
you can almost bet that she will be running in 2024.
Yeah,
as will John Neely Kennedy, your former client. Jim and Walker. Jim, you're on with Roy Fletcher.
Oh boy, Walker.
Yes, Jim.
Yeah. So Mr. Fletcher, as you just tried to,
yes, sir, Mr. Jim.
Nobody knows what happened with those 3 million illegal votes. Well, we know what happened. We know exactly what happened. There wasn't any illegal votes, not one. Your own commission couldn't find evidence of anything, not a single solitary.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that's what you informed me of. I'll make sure that I tell everybody that those illegal votes weren't illegal.
Well, he's right. There was a commission that found no illegal votes, and let's face it, Hillary won the vote. Trump won the Electoral College, and he's the president.
I don't have a problem.
But why doesn't he say that?
I don't have a problem.
He can't bring himself to say she got more votes than I did.
Why should he? He's president.
Well, but he goes out of his way instead of just being silent about it. He won't even.
Why should he?
He won't. Well, he makes up something. Just made that up, Roy. Just like he just made it up that Obama was not born in the U.S. He just made that up, Roy. That's what propelled him into a political figure.
Trump been a political figure for 30 years before that.
Yeah, but this is what got him going. And a lot of people still believe that nonsense. Barack Hussein Obama was not born on August 4th, 1961 in Honolulu, when we know he was.
If that's what they want to believe in the face of evidence, then they got no
By the
problem.
Way, I don't know that Trump's ever produced his birth certificate.
I don't know anybody.
I don't know,
has.
And he
I
hasn't.
Haven't.
We know he hasn't given us his financial records. And
well, he's not going to give you his financial records.
I know. You were right about that. You said it would never happen.
No.
And he's never released his college transcript. I don't know if he's a college graduate. He may not be.
Of course he is.
He hasn't released his transcript.
Look, he graduated from Wharton with an MBA.
No, it wasn't Wharton. He didn't graduate from Wharton
Penn
School.
State?
He graduated from Penn.
Okay.
Penn. Okay.
Yeah,
we're going to pause. We'll be back. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, wrapping it up with Roy Fletcher. Hopefully we'll have him back soon. 14 states voting today in Super Tuesday balloting, and Jeremy Evans writes, Electoral College was instituted because the majority of the U.S. population was largely illiterate and had little access to candidates, unlike today. That's Jeremy writing.
Okay.
I saw that only 24% of the people in Louisiana have a college degree, and that's those over the age of 25, Roy Fletcher.
All I know is Fordham claims him and the University of Pennsylvania claims him. That's all
No, Trump did not graduate from Fordham. He went to school at Fordham, and he went to school at Penn, but we don't know that he graduated. He has not released his transcript, and until he does, I question whether he had a degree.
Well, I'm glad you questioned that.
He did not. We know he did not graduate from Fordham.
I'm glad you questioned.
But he transferred from Fordham to Penn.
I'm glad you questioned.
But he has not released his transcript. And he questioned Obama. Obama never released his transcript either.
Well, you need to get him on here and ask him what his transcript's on.
Well, I don't think he graduated from college until he shows that he did.
Okay. I got you. Well,
okay. Unlike you, who has a law degree from LSU and undergraduate from Northwestern.
Well, then I'm not sure that Joe Biden finished in the top of his class in law school either.
Joe Biden
lied about everything about his credentials.
He was kicked out of Syracuse for plagiarism.
He sure was.
You're right, and he was a draft dodger like Trump.
Well, that's good.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Roy. Appreciate it. Lance Porter in here. Professor Lance Porter from Louisiana State University. 16 years at the Old War School, and this is a big week. The John Bro Symposium, the U.S. Senator who served Louisiana for 86 to 04, 18 years in the U.S. Senate, 14 years in the U.S. House of Representatives, elected when he was 28, on the motto that experience counts. Lance Porter, Tell us about what's happening with the Bro Symposium.
Well, we've got a whole day that we're bringing in a number of experts from across the country and here locally, too, to talk about upcoming elections. It's called Hacking Democracy. And we have a number of experts from actually across the world who are here to talk about everything from what's going to happen with our elections in terms of possible disinformation campaigns to people who are hacking certain things. We have hackers on our panels. So we've got a really interesting and diverse panel of people to come in and talk about these issues.
Do we face the danger of people actually, you know, propaganda is one thing, it's bad enough, but actually getting into the elections and making votes something that they were not cast as? Is that a real threat in this country?
I don't think that there's as much of a danger of that just because, you know, our voting systems are not really networked. And so the bigger danger, in my opinion, is the our information systems and where people choose to get information about where to vote, who to vote for, and those kinds of things. In some ways, our system has been compromised. And we have a bunch of experts who are going to come in and present a bunch of different points of view on this and what it means for us, because, you know, it's not as simple as, okay, someone's going to put false information out there and a voter is going to see that and automatically believe it. Obviously, they have many different ways that they get information. So there's some hysteria over these issues, and I think that we have a lot of people with different points of view who can speak to that.
Well, it's the annual John Bro Symposium. You've been doing this how long now?
Gosh,
a few
I don't
years.
Even know.
Few
yeah,
years.
It's been actually,
years.
Yeah.
But this is
it's my first year doing it, actually.
Okay,
Jim.
Well, and you're going to be moderating a panel, too.
Yes. So my panel is I'm bringing in 9 experts in different areas. Some are experts in disinformation. Some are experts in different areas of social media. So we have Andre Brock from Georgia Tech, who's an expert on African-American cybercultures. We have Josephine Lakito from University of Wisconsin, who actually was quoted in the Mueller report about the Russian trolls affecting our system. And we have Shannon McGregor coming in from Utah, who was recently, her work with Daniel Kreiss at North Carolina was cited in an extensive piece on Brad Pascal, Trump's head of his internet operations, and how they're using micro-targeting and certain dark posts to influence this election coming up.
Well, this is coming Thursday, 3:30 to 7:30 in the Holiday Forum at the Manship School. Open to the public?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you walk in the Manship School right there across from Tiger Stadium, and there's the Holiday Forum, and it'll be 3:30 to 7:30. The first one is the disinformation effect, the manipulation of political discourse. Second is secure the vote, how election officials ensure voting integrity. And then lastly, at 6:20 p.m., the Web Brigades, Russian troll farms and their impact on U.S. election. This panel, I hear, will investigate how Russia internet trolls infiltrated the American political conversation. How substantial was this in 2016?
Well, we don't know. We have some ideas about the number of ads that were purchased on Facebook and things like that. But it's really difficult to tell the extent of the operation, because I think that the paid ad part of it, you know, while it did have an effect, there's all kinds of trolls that operate in Twitter and things like that that are posting content that we know from research, and that's what we're looking at with this panel. We know it spread faster than things that are actually true.
The Riley Center for Media and Public Affairs at the LSU Manship School is hosting this in-depth look at how the spread of disinformation on social media and the susceptibility of electronic voting machines could affect the integrity of U.S. elections. It is amazing that 20 years ago, this would have been considered so futuristic that people would say, this couldn't happen in our lifetime. But technology has changed everything, including politics and everything else in American life.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, when we used to get our news from just a couple of channels and a few newspapers, it was a little easier to figure out who you could trust. And now we have a system that's based on algorithms and all kinds of things that don't really prioritize the truth. And so the information that spreads is whatever's most provocative, and oftentimes that's not true. And so, you know, what we're trying to look at is what effect does this have on our election system?
Well, Bernie Sanders is the person that Roy Fletcher identified as a candidate the president would like to run against. And we saw this in 1972 before the internet. Richard Nixon wanted to run against George McGovern, so he beat down Ed Muskie and beat down some other candidates, Henry Scoop Jackson, who were viable in 1972. And ultimately, he got the candidate he wanted, George McGovern, a gallant man, who, by the way, finished his career teaching at the University of New Orleans. Sometimes it's not just influencing a head-up election, it's determining who's in that final election. The Russians and others who want to affect the outcome, they do so at every step of the process. So what's going on right now?
Well, what we're seeing with Bernie is we're definitely seeing there is some indications that Russian trolls are attempting to create chaos within the system. And if you study these things, you look at what Russian trolls actually do all the time. Whatever is chaotic, they're going to put that forward. And so right now it's coronavirus, it's Bernie, it's you know, any of the things that are contentious online, that's what trolls will push. And so, but you're right, Bernie does seem to be the choice of Russian trolls. And so you have Russian trolls who are impersonating Bernie supporters who are attacking people, other candidate supporters within Twitter and other places.
Well, unlike others, I think if Bernie's the nominee, I don't think he'll take a beating like McGovern did. He only carried one state, couldn't even carry his home state of South Dakota. But Bernie could win the election. Trump would be the favorite, but Bernie could win. And sometimes candidates get what they want and they get more than they bargained for. The Democrats really wanted to run against Trump in 2016.
That's correct.
They wanted him, and look what happened. And in 1980, Jimmy Carter wanted Ronald Reagan. and look what happens. So sometimes when you try to affect an election, you get more than you bargain for.
That's correct. And, you know, that's what's interesting about this whole thing is that you see certain agents that think they want Bernie, but we really don't know what's going to happen. And all we have to do is look back to 2016 to see that that's the case.
Now, I mentioned the Electoral College in our preceding segment with Roy Fletcher. If there were no Electoral College, Louisiana would be a state where the candidates would visit in the general election. But no matter who the Democratic nominee is and no matter who the Republican nominee is, and we know that to be President Trump, they're not coming to Louisiana because our electoral votes are a sure thing for the President of the United States. They're going to spend almost all their time in five or six states, which are considered toss-up states, and that's just the way it will be. Is this Richard? Richard, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, real briefly, I'm just curious, considering both people that have been on today, meddling in elections and this polarizing effect of the presidency in the U.S., and we talked about Constitution before. Our founders did a great job of separating powers amongst the three branches. How much blame do we put on ourselves as a nation, considering that we've given so much power to the presidency and allowed so much influence towards us, versus allowing, you know, the other branches to really mediate and balance out this, where we wouldn't have these issues of Russians and whoever meddling in our elections?
All right. Does the executive branch have more power than the others right now?
Well, it certainly seems that way. You know, I study media, so it's kind of difficult for me to make judgments on that. But I can certainly say that the media system has changed, and it's being used in unprecedented ways that our founders had no idea, you know, that would be the case.
Well, thank you, Lance Porter. And remember, the Bro Symposium at the Manship School this Thursday, 3:30 p.m.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Stay tuned.